Curtis Sliwa.
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from the
Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Minutes after the hour of 12, and there's no doubt with the theme song, it is the return of the big back daddy of all, Dominic Carter.
It's not about my return, it's about your return.
That's right, I'm pimping off of your theme song because I have returned lock, stock, and barrel to not only host 12 to 3 Monday through Fridays, but the drive home at 5, 5 to 6, which I started to do towards the middle of last week, just to sort of try to get back into the groove.
You look like $1 million, man.
I didn't win the Mega Lotto. I didn't win the Powerball. What was that? Close to $400 million. I got stiffed on that. But I did survive quite the physical ordeal. And before we get into the nitty-gritty of what happened on that night of December 13th, that Wednesday, during the 8 hours of surgery that has led me to be able to return to the microphones to talk with our extended family here, our listeners at WABC.
Wait a minute. You said 8 hours of surgery?
Yes, 8 hours of surgery, divided into two sections, which were incredibly important. After 5.5 hours, a major decision was made by the head surgeon to adopt a procedure which he couldn't consult with me because obviously I was under. But it actually is quite fortuitous. It was the best decision that could be made. If they hadn't made that decision, I would be in pretty bad shape right now. Pretty bad shape. But before we go there, the question of the day is I have grown a beard in the interim. And there are people who like it. And there are people who don't like it.
It looks good. It looks good.
And I have committed that whatever the people of WABC, our listeners, determine on our social networking or through the calls, if you determine that I should stick with this beard, as much as I hate the beard, I'll live with the beard.
Now, why do you hate it?
I just don't like the feel of it. I understand it's a different look, and I understand people where they've seen me in growing up all through the years, you know, always clean shaven or a little bit of a stubble. And so this is a totally different look. My girlfriend, Nancy Regula, she loves it.
You see, it gives you the opportunity to reinvent yourself.
My latest rescue cat, Ajax, a little kitten, he loves it. He just constantly rubs against it.
You see?
But then again, I'm the one who has to live with it.
And you got to trim it up and shape it up, and that's
well,
almost
actually,
a weekly
Nancy
thing.
Well, actually, Nancy did that for me this morning.
Oh, okay.
That's I was good. Doing a radio interview to Puerto Rico to see how things were going there with the recovery, not going well. But she was able to trim the beard so that it wasn't standing out in all different angles. So if you'd like to, ladies and gentlemen, please go to the Curtis Sliwa Facebook page at WABC, because we're going to be adding up the tallies. Should the beard stay? Makes me look a bit like a hipster with a gray beard. Or should it go? And as you know, I hate millennials and I hate hipsters with a passion. You can also go to Curtis Sliwa WABC on the Twitter account. Or you can call and obviously give me your salutations and greetings upon my return. I was not expected to be back this early after the ordeal.
So how did you pull it off to get back this early, and how do you feel?
All right, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. I want to thank Justin B. Love, our producer and our phone screener, for constantly doing updates and posts as to the various hoops that I had to sort of jump through during this long recovery process. But let me take you back. It was that Wednesday, December 13th, and it was snowing that day. And I was wheeled in for the prep. And it was to remove the chronic Crohn's disease that had infected my small intestines and my large intestines, or better known as the colon and the ileum. It had made, as many of you know, life almost impossible. I was not able to eat normal food. I was stuck on a diet of turkey and Gatorade. That was all I could consume. Anything else, I would vomit. I would have reflux, and I had constant nausea. Nausea was with me morning, noon, and night. And I had exhausted all other opportunities at coming up with a remedy, whether it was through diet, I tried that, whether it was medical options, you know, pharmaceutical products, of which there are many. I had tried all of them. It didn't work for me. Holistic, homeopathic, you name it. I tried it over a span of 2 years. The only thing that kept me able to broadcast to all of you through this ordeal, because you witnessed Dominic Carter. Sometimes
it was not pretty at all.
I was on the ground. I could not get up. I was in a fetal position. I would take hillbilly heroin, oxycodone, that had been prescribed to me in order to permit me to talk. Because without that, I couldn't even talk. That's how bad the pain was. And at times, it would be like a firewall inside. It would go on for 20 hours a day. There would be no relief. And then maybe I'd get a few hours of sleep, and then it would start back all over again. And I was deteriorating in front of everybody. Everybody was being nice to me. Oh, you've lost a lot of weight. See, I didn't want to get down to 150 pounds. I had been 210 pounds, and a lot of that was muscle mass. I lost all the muscle mass. When I would look at myself in the mirror, I was looking at a picture of my grandfather, Fidelio Bianchino, in his 90s. I shrunk. And I recognized that, boy, I was in a downward spiral. And if I didn't come up with a remedy, I might be just incapable of functioning any longer as I was used to. So I went from all different medical experts, surgeons, people who were experts in the field. They didn't seem to have a handle on it. And then it was Greek Independence Day. And every year we're invited to participate, the Guardian Angels and myself, by John and Margo Katsimatidis. And Margot has had somewhat similar problems. So when I approached her, she said, "You look like you know what. What's the problem? You're having stomach issues, aren't you?" She was almost like she was a clairvoyant. And then she started to explain to me some of the problems she had undergone. And she made a reference that I really needed to go to Columbia Presbyterian and deal with the doctors that she had dealt with. And both she and John made the introduction, and it was the best thing that happened, because these doctors nailed it.
So wait a minute. Katsimatidis' wife had the same condition.
Similar.
That you have now.
Right.
Okay. All right. So you decide to go to Columbia Presbyterian.
Well, I took her advice because
it's one of the best hospitals. I didn't mean to cut you off. It's one of the best hospitals in the entire world. I try and explain that to my wife because she has lupus.
Yes.
And I try and explain to her that they have the best doctors in the entire world. But go ahead.
Well, you see, the Arabs, they all go there from.
Wait a minute. Oh, the Arabs
from the Middle East.
Yeah, okay.
Because they like to tell their constituents upon their return to Qatar or Saudi Arabia or Oman or the UAE or the Emirates that they weren't treated by either a Hindu or a Jewish doctor. That's why they were at Columbia Presbyterian, because all the doctors there are Presbyterians.
Oh, that's the line they use.
Yeah, they have a whole floor, the 10th floor. They're all these Arab sheikhs.
Seriously?
Know? Oh, yeah. And actually, they're being treated by who else? Hindu and Jewish doctors.
Well, maybe, of course. And maybe that explains it, because I've never been to the 10th floor of Columbia.
Well, that's up at 168th and Broadway.
Right.
And so the concept in getting me back on track was I had to have an operation, a very intense, complicated operation. They looked at the MRIs. They said, "Wow, you've had a lot of damage." Because, you know, I've had surgeries for the gunshot wounds and then the reverse surgery and then removal of my prostate. And they said, I know why you've had problems with doctors. They don't want to do this surgery. It's a very risky surgery. And so they went in, and in the first 5 hours, it was a lot of damage. And they started removing things that had ulcerated to my stomach walls.
So wait a minute. You said it's a very risky operation.
Yes.
So what could have happened in worst case scenario?
Well, worst case scenario is they could have gone in and tried to remove the Crohn's disease, but the Crohn's disease would just keep resurfacing. And then every few years, you'd have to go back in and have more of your intestines removed. And so you're not looking forward to that. You don't want a zipper on your stomach. every few years. The other thing is, after 5.5 hours, the lead surgeon said, I'm not going to leave him with a colostomy bag. He's had that before after the gunshot wounds. I had to live with that for 2 years. We're going to try a different procedure to avoid him having a colostomy bag, which is a big pain in the neck. And I'm glad he made that decision. Now, it made things much more complicated for the surgical team. It meant an additional 2.5 hours of an operation that was very intense to begin with. And after 8 hours, I was in the recovery room, and I was completely drenched in morphine and fentanyl, the painkillers, because stomach surgery, other than bone surgery, provides you with the most pain during your recovery period. I mean, the pain is excruciating. It was worse than when I got shot with the 5 hollow point bullets on June 19th, 1992.
So when you came out of surgery, were you in pain, or you were so high on the painkillers that you didn't feel a thing?
Oh, no, no. I was high on the painkillers, but I could still feel the pain. That pain did not leave you. It was intense. And naturally, you have a catheter that you're strapped to. You're in the bed, and you're wondering, you know, what's going on? The best news is when the lead surgeon came in and he said, I chose not to give you a colostomy bag. And I said, glory, hallelujah, hallelujah. There's something good that had emerged from this, because I did not want that colostomy bag. He said, but because of it, your recovery time is going to be more difficult. Because normally if we give you a colostomy bag, it helps in elimination, and then eventually we have to do reverse surgery. But I wanted to do it without giving you a colostomy bag, which is going to mean it's going to make it a lot more intensive in terms of the pain that you're going to experience right now, because we've got to get everything once again regenerated and moving inside of your system, because the biggest symbol they were looking for is passing gas. If I had not passed gas within like 10 to 12 days, they'd have to go back in there, because then there's something going wrong. So you're praying every day, God, I got to fart. If I don't fart, they're going to have to go in and reoperate, and I'm not looking forward to that. And so every day they're coming in. Did you fart? Did you pass gas?
Curtis, what is wrong with
you? But it's true. It's true.
But Curtis, haven't we had a conversation that there are some things that you don't necessarily have to say on the radio? Too much information. But go ahead. You have to pass gas
right
in order for them to make sure that you're okay.
Finally, I passed gas, and I had to prove it to them.
How do you prove you passed gas?
They had to listen.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're not going to take your word for it, because they know you don't want to go through a second operation.
So you got to say, excuse me, nurse, ring the bell.
Exactly.
And she or he has to come in the room and wait for you to pass gas.
Oh, yeah. And then naturally record it, you know, write it down.
Well, please tell me your girlfriend didn't have to be in the room when
she was with me the whole time, Nancy. She was my guardian angel.
Nancy is a sweetheart. But so you're telling me that your girlfriend had to be in the room while you were deeply waiting to pass gas.
I could have sped up the process if they would have only given me some beans and rice. I could have filled up that room.
Spanish beans and rice?
Of course, right there in Washington Heights. I mean, I could have gotten it, and boy, I would have been passing gas constantly.
You're still the same. We're glad you're back.
So then this is what happened. This past Thursday, when we got hit with the bomb cyclone, a.k.a. the blizzard, I was called in to have the stitches and staples removed. I have over 100 staples and stitches from the operation.
Yuck.
They wanted to cancel because of the weather. I said, no, we are not canceling. I am getting in there. I'm getting these staples and these stitches out of me. And they were good enough to do that.
Did it hurt when they were taking this?
Oh, hell yes. Like Nancy said to me, you know, I could have done the same thing with a staple gun remover and just taken the staples out that are on the outside. You know, the stitches are on the inside. So that was done. So that helped in the recovery process. And now, and this is where my war will begin with Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, as he wants to crack down on legal medical marijuana, where it's been ratified by initiative and referendum around the country.
That's a good thing.
Right. We're going to discuss that later on in the show. But I am now decompressing, detoxing, withdrawing from the massive amounts of painkillers that I have consumed for 2.5 years. First, the oxycodone, the hillbilly heroin, for 2 years. Very addictive. And naturally, the fentanyl, 10 times stronger than the morphine itself.
So wait a minute. What does it feel like when you're on these drugs?
Well, you welcome it. because that's why these drugs were created, which is to give you pain relief, without which you would be climbing the walls. You'd be screaming in pain.
So it doesn't give you a high?
Oh, yes. You are very high. You're very high. There's no doubt about it. The morphine itself, when they inject it into you, it's like it goes right to the marrow of your bone. You feel almost like a vegetable for the first few minutes of it. You don't have a care in the world because it removes all the pain. The fentanyl, which is even more powerful and, as we see, more deadly in the streets, they gave me a pump in which I could inject myself every time I needed it. And naturally, it would cut it off if you were in danger of ODing. But I was dependent on that all during the recovery process.
So wait a minute,
process.
It measures the amount that's in your body? It has a way of measuring
correct.
That?
Okay. And it'll cut it off. Because okay. if not, you'll OD. You'll just keep hitting that pump. You know, you'll beep, beep, beep. Because the pain is so overwhelming. So now I'm going through withdrawal, which I've had to do before after the gunshot wounds and the reverse surgery and then the removal of my prostate. And you have to mentally deal with it because your body craves this. Mentally, you have to shut off because all these painkillers do is they shut off the pain sectors of your brain. You still have the pain. You just don't realize it.
But wait a minute. I just had a flashback. So once you pass gas, that said to the medical staff that your recovery was well underway.
Yes. Yeah, they were dancing the horror and the tarantella. They were doing the poopy dance. They were loving it. They were saying, okay, now we can actually plan on discharging you and not having to schedule you for a second operation.
You were not embarrassed? Did it smell?
No. No, I welcome the smell. Are you kidding? The smell meant I wasn't going to have to go under the knife for another 8 hours. Anyway, our numbers, if you'd like to call in, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Again, go to the Curtis Lewa Facebook page at WABC. Should I remove this hipster beard? Or should I keep it in perpetuity?
Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
77 WABC.
I just want to celebrate another day of living. I just want to celebrate another day of life.
Oh, and I can celebrate another day of living. And, you know, I had no idea over these 2.5 years, Dominic Carter, of all the people who suffer from these stomach disorders, colitis, ileitis, Crohn's disease. In fact, Rob Bartlett of The Morning Show has had serious Crohn's disease, so much so that he extended an invitation for me to join the Don Imus Show tomorrow at 8:30 in the morning, which I'll be on to discuss that. I had no idea that Rob Bartlett was so affected by Crohn's disease.
To be honest with you, I didn't even know what it was until you mentioned it. And then I noticed after your situation, I started seeing television commercials about it. But up until that point, I guess I just completely ignored the commercials. But so until it happened to you, I didn't know anything about this.
Well, years ago, it was thought that Crohn's disease was genetic, that if you were Jewish, you had a predisposition to this. So you would go into the waiting rooms of surgeons, you know, who are specialists in this, and will mostly be Jews, very few Gentiles. I got to tell you, that's changed dramatically. In the last 2 years, the number of specialists that I've seen, the incredible diversity of people who suffer in silence. I mean, they really do suffer. And many of them are afraid of an operation because they think that's going to mean future operations. And I've got to reassure them, no, if you have tried everything, if you have exhausted all possibilities, why would you continue to suffer in silence? Get the operation. They have made extraordinary progress in measures to give you relief. No person should have to live with the kind of pain that I lived with the last 2.5 years.
So you went through being shot by the mob.
Right.
Prostate cancer.
Right.
And now this situation.
This was far worse. For 2.5 years, I have never had this kind of pain. I have never suffered this way. Oftentimes between shows, because obviously I'd have to do the drive at 5 also, I would go into the men's room where there's a shower stall, and I would take a hot shower, sort of like the Rhesus monkeys, you know, you see in Japan, you know, they're always in that hot, for an hour, just to get a little bit of relief, just so that I could talk, in addition to popping the oxycodone, the hillbilly heroin. And I know we want to blame Big Pharma for everything, for all these oxy problems and opioid. Let me tell you something. Without Big Pharma producing a lot of these painkillers, a lot of people would have no relief whatsoever. they would suffer miserably.
So they literally cut out part of your intestines. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
And so then they just connect the other parts, and the body
slowly reacclimates.
Wow. And so it can still function without part of that intestine.
Well, that's the over-under point score. Will it? The surgeons do it, but they can't guarantee you that it will absolutely function the way it was meant to be. Luckily for me, everything seems to be kicking in, and it all starts with that first fart. Anyway, let's go to the phones. It's Paul first on the line from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Paulie? Yes, hello, Paul?
Paul, are you with us?
Paul seems to have fallen into the abyss. Let's go to Leo in Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here, Leo.
Yeah, Curtis. You there?
I'm here, loud and clear, Leo.
Listen, Curtis, I know you're a tough guy, right? Okay, but listen, I went through the same surgery as you did in the same hospital as you did with marvelous Dr. Feingold. I don't know if he was your surgeon. Amazing guy. Now, when I was recovering, you're right, it was a lot of pain. But when they were giving me the fentanyl, I wasn't pushing the button. And he asked me, why are you not pushing the button? Because it was making me hallucinate. And it was making my breathing labored. The liquid Advil did the job fine. And fentanyl is a weird drug because it's a synthetic narcotic. It's not even from the opium plant. And they gut me like a pig. They took out like 6 inches of my intestine from colon cancer.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I had 9 inches taken out, so I know exactly how you felt. But you see, each human body is different. When they were ready to discharge me, they wouldn't discharge me unless they could give me a painkiller that I could take with me. They weren't going to give me the morphine or the fentanyl, which I understood. So they wanted to give me Vicodin with Tylenol, and so they started to introduce that to me. I got to tell you, I had such a violent experience. I almost put my hand through the wall. They had to send doctors in. They thought I was going to tear the hospital up. I wanted to rip the catheter out. I was actually going through, as you just described, some serious psychotic disorders as a result of that drug. And then my girlfriend Nancy Regula said to the doctors, he said, look, according to the rules of New York State, Curtis now qualifies for medical marijuana, you know, as a potential painkiller, as something that will retard his desire to vomit or have reflux or to have nausea. And they say, we don't keep that in the hospital. That's not an option. So Nancy naturally said, you would let him shoot himself up with fentanyl, which we totally understood, because I reacted well to fentanyl and I reacted well to morphine. But he can't even have access to medical marijuana, which might help him. See, each person is different. Medical marijuana might work for some. Fentanyl might work for others. Morphine, Vicodin, Percocet. Each body is different. So this isn't about blaming Big Pharma for creating these drugs that are painkillers that a lot of people survive on. It's not about demonizing medical marijuana, which is what Jeff Sessions has done, obviously Chris Christie, and our own Michael Savage. It's saying just keep options available for people, because what works for me didn't work for Leo, might not work for Dominic. But if you keep the options available, that's what this is all about, trying to give people pain relief during their recovery time. But thanks. There were many well-wishers out there. You sent emails. You sent letters. You've stopped me in the street. I appreciate all the concern that you had, and I just want you now to participate in determining whether I have to keep this beard on or not by going to Curtis Sliwa, the WABC Facebook page, or Curtis Sliwa WABC on the Twitter page, and I will abide by whatever the rest of you decide, even if I have to look like an aging hipster. Oofa!
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Yours truly, Curtis Sliwa, back in the saddle. Dominic Carter, the big Mac Daddy, at his on his horse, his saddle. His is black, mine is white. As we ride into the sunset.
Why is mine black? Why is yours white?
Because you're the brother, right?
Right.
Although at times when we speak, it's hard for some of our listeners to know who is blacker.
He's back.
But anyway.
He's back.
It didn't matter, white or black, or any shade in between. If you happen to got to get caught in that bomb cyclone on Thursday, or what I would prefer to call a blizzard, good old-fashioned blizzard, and you happen to be at Terminal 4 at JFK, where most of the international flights arrive, you are screwed. I mean, really screwed. And this is another black eye on our transportational grid here in the major city of the world, New York City. We saw that an Amtrak train got stuck in coming into Penn Station, caused all kinds of chaos, problems on the subways with its grid, its switching, and problems with the Long Island Railroad. Constantly rails are splitting because of the cold, and traffic has to be diverted. I mean, it's a mess every day. But Terminal Number 4 is the international entry for so many foreigners coming into this city. And they flood in here. You've seen them all during this Christmas and New Year's holiday, walking around. I'm trying to walk around, you know, in order to exercise, to get the movement. And I'm bumping into them left and right because, naturally, they're looking up. They're looking to the left. They're looking to the right. And they're not looking straight ahead of them. But they're everywhere.
And they're spending money.
Spending a lot of money. Euros, yen, you name it. They are a boon to the local economy, and they just keep coming. It doesn't matter. Remember, originally they said with Trump being elected, less would come to New York City? Well, I haven't seen less. In fact, it looks like more. And then, all of a sudden, Thursday, and I understand, okay, the blizzard hits, the bomb cyclone hits, and hundreds of flights are canceled. So I've been in that situation. I'm sure, Dominic, you've been in that situation.
Of course.
But the response of the Port Authority, which is the patronage cycle that is run by Andrew Ivalice Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Facha Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I.
He's back.
And Shamu El Jefe, Chris Christie, although he's soon to be out in Murphy Inn, was so third worldish in terms of their response that if you notice, not only did people have to start sleeping on the floors and using the facilities at Terminal 4 as they try to get redirected and get other flights, but on Saturday, fights broke out. Fights broke out between passengers because they were getting no answers. There was nobody there from the Port Authority.
Let's be honest. Let's be brutally honest about this. Take the people aside at JFK. I it is horrendous if I have to travel into JFK. Doesn't JFK come off to you, because it comes off this way to me, as a third world
airport? Oh, absolutely. Just go into the bathrooms.
Right, and I'm not talking about people right
now. Just go into the bathrooms at most of the terminals, and you are appalled. Now, I've flown in and out of the Mexico City International Airport. I think it is better run, even though we consider Mexico a third world country, than JFK. I've been to other international ports of call in what are called third world countries where their flight arrivals and flight departures are 10,000 times better.
Now, they don't have the volume of people coming in daily that we do here in New York. But the bottom line is there's simply no accountability.
None. None whatsoever. And there seems to be no concern from either of the governors who share responsibility for gouging the taxpayers with the incredible amounts of money that we fork over to the Port Authority. Now, here is just some of the passengers who are stranded Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and into today, Monday. 5 days stuck on the floor at Terminal 4 where a main line burst, a main pipe burst on Sunday, flooding virtually the entire terminal.
It was just a madhouse. They're just, like, pushing people out, and, like, nobody was moving. Everyone's, like, confused.
Luggage everywhere and people everywhere. They turn off the lights off in the international place where you where the luggage arrives. The evacuate area on the fire alarm started going off. I went upstairs. It's crazy, too, so someone to come here. They don't know what to do. I don't know what to do.
So there are also people who were expecting to pick up passengers who were arriving. Those flights were canceled, but the luggage went ahead. So now you have thousands of pieces of luggage that have to be picked up. People are more than happy to pick it up on behalf of their friends, visitors, relatives, and they're not permitted to do so. Just complete and total chaos.
And let's not forget the luggage that was damaged.
Yes.
So let's say you're fortunate and you made it in and you eventually connect up with your bag. Your bag may have been flooded with water and your clothing all of your materials to get by have been destroyed.
You're, the water damage. You're being nice. What about all those bags that have been violated by the bag processors who have decided, let's take advantage of this situation, like they typically do at JFK, and they start stealing from in the bags? Now, they'll tell you, oh, no, we don't do that anymore. They do it on a regular basis. I can't tell you how many times people have had baggage come in on an international flight, and the baggage handlers have just absolutely, like locusts, gone through the bags and stolen everything they can get their hands on.
I have been to cities to give a speech, and my clothing didn't arrive.
Yes.
That is the worst feeling in the world.
So what did you put on, a sheet?
Honestly, no. I was coming back one time from the Republican convention covering it, and it was in Minnesota at the time.
Minneapolis.
Right.
St. Paul, right?
That's right. And I had to give a speech in Pennsylvania the next morning. The convention did not end until 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
This was McCain's convention,
I believe.
That
was actually Sarah Palin's convention.
Right.
That was her breakout speech.
Right, right, right. And I had to be on a 6 a.m. flight to York, Pennsylvania.
Oh,
that
sure,
sounds
sure,
right?
Sure.
Okay, so it's on the border of the Cleveland area and so on.
Yeah.
I arrive. I expect to look fresh, you know, to give a speech. My family's meeting me there, coming from New York. No bag.
Mm.
So all I could do at that point was wear the same clothes. My daughter ran to the local Macy's and bought me a tie and a shirt, and you just wing it. You just go with it.
Well,
and the clothing arrived the next day.
That Macy's is no longer open. I think it's been closed with a lot of the other Macy's out there. So you would have had to Amazon it ahead. Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. If you happen to have been in proximity to JFK, if you happen to work there, if you happen to have been stranded there, or you were there to pick up passengers because you suddenly realized that they were not on the flights that had been designated. And then to those people who actually were able to fly in, and then they didn't even have a designated gate. So they had to stay out on the tarmac for hours, freezing their tuchus off. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And you would have thought, Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, would have been there. You know, would have been leading the state effort to take care of these passengers and to deal with their concerns. He was missing in action. You would have thought our mayor, right? He would have been there, since he loves to cater to an international audience. Can't wait to fly out of New York City and talk at some conference bashing Trump and the USA. He wasn't there.
But you know what time it is. You, of all people, know what time it is. This basically occurred over the weekend. Over the weekends, remember, Bloomberg would be in Bermuda, flying himself to Bermuda.
That's right.
Over the weekends, you can't find a chief executive unless it's something really, really explosive that will lead the newscast so that they can look presidential.
And then the schmuck, no make that the putz, Chuck E. Cheese Schumer, on his weekly press conference.
But why do you call Schumer? What did you call him?
Well, he's a schmuck, but actually he's really a putz. He has his weekly press conference that you members of the Fourth Estate, you know, you show up and you applaud like seals. You never ask him a tough question.
Really?
And
how do we do that like seals? Do we clap up?
Oh, Chuck,
like
please,
that?
Please give us some audio. Give us some video so we have a story tonight.
That's what we say?
Yes, yes.
Like
please,
that?
Chuck, we're not going to ask you. That's right. We're not going to ask you any tough questions. So he's talking about new technology to detect fentanyl in bags at JFK. And I'm saying, hey, schmuck, hey, putz, why not talk about the disaster of what's just happened at JFK and all the federal dollars that get wasted when they get re-diverted to the Port Authority? So instead of hearing from the governor of New York, the governor of New Jersey, the mayor of the city, or the schmuck, no make that the putz, Chuck E. Cheese Schumer, who did we hear from instead? The head of the Port Authority, a person of no consequence named Rick Cotton.
The pipe had frozen, so this appears to be directly weather-related. But it is not clear why the pipe was not weather protected. Getting passengers to gates, getting them unloaded in a timely fashion was completely unacceptable.
As for today,
you know, he must have had boll weevils in his cotton ears.
Now, wait a minute. That's one of the chief executives at the Port Authority.
That's the shot caller. That's
okay.
The guy in charge.
Okay, that's the guy. And he's talking almost in the third person,
yes,
like he has no responsibility,
yes,
for making sure that the pipes are covered during the cold winter months. This sounds like a New York City Housing Authority story.
Exactly. And you know something? It's another black eye on New York.
Wait. Why has it got to be black?
Well, we can't have a white eye, can we?
Why not?
Yeah, but a white eye.
Why has it got to be black and
because
bad?
You would never see a white eye in a bomb cyclone or in a blizzard. It would have to be a black eye. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And then yesterday, as I go for my daily subway patrol as part of me getting back on track.
So wait a minute. So my eyes were not deceiving me. I did see pictures of you on Facebook patrolling.
Exactly.
Following your surgery.
Of course.
What is wrong with you?
That's all part of the recuperative process, getting back on track. But I thought I was seeing sort of through a drug-induced psychosis. Hot pants. I need to dance. I thought I saw James Brown there on the A train heading downtown. And it was a bunch of freaks, hipsters, millennials, wearing no pants.
Calm down.
They had no pants on yesterday.
Calm down.
It was 20 degrees below zero, wind chill factor.
Can I ask you something about that?
Yes.
Because apparently it was a national phenomenon.
They're freaks.
I want to ask you something about that. Don't take this the wrong way. It's sort of like the, what do they call them, the polar bears?
Yeah, polar bears. I was asked to swim
okay,
in Coney
Island. But notice, you don't really see black people out there with no underwear on.
No.
And not, what is wrong with you
black
people?
Black people are not crazy. White people are mashug. They're robots. They're titched. Hot pants. I need to dance.
So
right
wait,
here.
That explains like the women that were on the subways with no pants on, just
no pants.
Their panties.
Yeah, no pants. And guys with hairy legs. You know, I was ready to start dispensing Nair. You know, give them Nair. Say, hey, smear this on your legs and get rid of all that hair, you gorilla. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
Hot pants. Hey, hot pants. Hot pants. Smoking that hot pants.
Yeah, where were your pants yesterday? I didn't even see baggy pants on some of these guys. They had no pants on. Total freaks. Anyway, let's go to the phones. Dominic Carter in the house. It is my return back to both shifts here at WABC 12 to 3 and then the drive home at 5. Plus, help me on with Don Imus and his crew tomorrow at 8:30. Anyway, let's go to Paul in Regal Park. Welcome to WABC, Paulie.
Hey guys. Well, welcome back, Curtis. You sound so great. I'm so happy you're back, and you sound good. You feeling good?
Oh, enormously better than I was.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, I'm a musician. I play for the troops. I go over there a lot. I play in a Bon Jovi tribute band. And I was in Qatar for Thanksgiving, and I was in Dubai for New Year's. And I gotta tell you, the airports there are like, you can eat off the floor. It's just unbelievable. They're so gorgeous. In Qatar, you have there's a train inside the airport where you can just go between things and see. It's like they have a hotel in there. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's all unified, and you think you're in 2001 Space Odyssey. It's crazy.
You're absolutely correct. The only problem, though, Paul, because I had to go to Dubai first and then catch a connecting flight to Bahrain, is when you go through passport control, they go through your passport.
They surely do.
And when they see all of a sudden the stamp Ben Gurion.
Yes, they do.
Israel's main airport, they oftentimes will turn you away.
Almost always will turn you away.
Saudi Arabia, that's what they do. Those fair weather friends of ours.
Look
those
at that.
Fake, phony, fraudulent princes with the fake mustaches, beards, and schmatas on their heads.
You're back. You and I both were in Bahrain and Saudi Arabia. Look
no,
at
they
that.
Turned me away from Saudi Arabia. They wouldn't let me in because I would have wreaked havoc on the fake, phony, fraudulent princes in the house of fraud.
Curtis Sliwa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Watch me walking, walking out the door.
7 minutes after the hour one. Our Big Mac Daddy is in the house today, Dominic Carter, and it is my return to a normal schedule in both hosting 12 to 3 Monday through Fridays and the drive home at 5 to 6. It's great to be back and in the midst of another major self-inflicted controversy by this president who has fed the beast all weekend long in spending so much time at Camp David fending off the criticism by the author of the book Fire and Fury, which is a number one bestseller now, which is a critique of the Trump White House. And the president is basically saying, Dominic Carter, that he doesn't know this guy Wolf. It's almost like he's a person of no consequence. Yet the author himself traces his history back with Donald Trump to when he would typically get on the phone with you and other journalists and swap stories. You scratch my belly, I scratch yours. This is what author Michael Wolff had to say about his history with President Donald Trump.
I've known him since the 90s. When I was at New York Magazine, mm-hmm. I was one of the people he used to call up to complain about something that had been said about. Actually, mostly it was to complain about something that had not been said, why he had right. not been in an article.
So who do you believe right there? Michael Wolff, who claims he's had a long history with Donald Trump, who had complete access to the West Wing of the White House. He's walking in and out with Steve Bannon and others. He's interviewing them there. The president acting, I don't know, I never saw this guy before in my life. How did he get in here? Or do you side with the Donald Trump supporters? First, Steve Miller, who was on with Jake Tapper of CNN and then had to be escorted off the set.
Literally.
As he drilled down on Wolf and what he called tabloid garbage.
Steve Bannon's eloquence in that description notwithstanding, it's tragic and unfortunate that Steve would make these grotesque comments so out of touch with reality and obviously so vindictive. And the whole White House staff is deeply disappointed in his comments, which were grotesque. And with respect to the Trump Tower meeting that he's talking about, he wasn't even there when any of this went down, so he's not really a remotely credible source on any of it. It reads like an angry, vindictive person spouting off to a highly discreditable author. The book is best understood as a work of very poorly written fiction. And I also will say that the author is a garbage author of a garbage book.
A garbage author of a garbage book. Stephen Miller, who was a protege of Steve Bannon. I mean, wherever you would see Bannon, you would see Stephen Miller. Miller was his disciple. But he had to go on national TV and throw Bannon under the bus. Or I have a feeling it would be a short life in the West Wing of the White House for him.
But the problem with the interview that he did yesterday with Jake Tapper, it was clear from watching that interview for just 1 minute that he was playing to an audience of one, as so many people in the Trump administration do. It's not about what's the best spin to reach the American people. Every media appearance is designated to please the occupant of the Oval Office. And this is turning into a very sad narrative in terms of how do you dismiss a guy, the journalist here, when you let him in. Curtis, you and I both know
yes.
how hard it is. You don't walk into the White House.
No.
At all. You don't even get onto the grounds of the White House.
Right.
Unless you're cleared by the United States Secret Service, a background check, and someone at the White House gives their stamp of approval, and you're still investigating. Now, to get to the West Wing, that is almost impossible. So it's almost delusional what we're seeing coming out of the White House to try and spin a response for something where they screwed up.
Well, not only that, but they sound like they're mimicking one another. Look at his former campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, who also took to the lens route in order to defend the president against Arthur Wolf and everything that's in the book Fire and Fury.
This is a book of fiction. Not only is it not accurate, there are so many misrepresentations in this book that it shouldn't be taken seriously. Mr. Wolf himself claimed at the very beginning of the book that it looks like he's taken liberties to put things in the book that may not have happened, but he lets the reader decide. That is not journalistic integrity, and this book is a complete fabrication.
You know, what's so incredible here is that almost everybody commenting on this book has not read it. I was somewhat sidetracked when I would listen to Carl Bernstein and others demean this author as being tabloid-esque. And then I began to realize, well, they're just jealous because they didn't have that access. In fact, no author has ever had access like that to the West Wing, although they've been given limited access before.
And do you think you get that type of access without the stamp of the President of the United States?
And more importantly, as I began reading this, I've gotten through 12 chapters so far, half the book.
Really?
This is a well-written book. This is not a tabloid. I love tabloids. What's the first newspaper I read every day? New York Post, Daily News. I am a tabloid junkie. This is not a tabloid.
And by the way, I saw something about you in the Post just the other day about you detoxifying.
Yes.
But let's stay on Trump. We'll come back to that.
Right. But I love tabloids. And this is not a tabloid. These are all Republicans who are being quoted, who either work in the White House or deal directly with the Trump administration. Have you heard any of them disavow their quotes?
Absolutely not.
So now this is supposed to be all made up, all fake, all garbage. The guy spent 18 months on this. He was on the campaign trail before Trump got elected. He was then given access to the West Wing. He was walking around with Steve Bannon, going from office to office.
But we're starting to see why President Trump is a political novice. Rule 101, if they got you and they got you good, don't respond. You don't give it fuel. The president is responding almost each and every day via Twitter, which reignites this nonstop.
And you know what makes this a legitimate book? Everybody thinks that Steve Bannon is, what can we call it? Deep throat. That he is the one who guided Wolf. When you actually read the book, you realize he's critical of Steve Bannon. He's critical, meaning the author, Wolf, of Steve Bannon and his people, of Kushner and his people, and of the former chief of staff, Rinsaud Priebus, and his people. He's critical of all three.
Wait a minute. Wait, what was that?
Rinsaud Priebus, because he got rinsed out. But the person who turns out to be the deep throat in all of this, who provides most of the information, and you see her name popping up constantly, a woman named Katie Walsh. She was the White House deputy chief of staff, brought on by Rinsaud Priebus to bring order to the White House. She was incapable of bringing order because the president just would not cooperate.
Haven't we hit that order reset button like 5 or 6 times?
Yes, but you see, she was the second person that left the administration. The first one, not because he wanted to, Flynn. He was shown the door. She was the second one to leave. She knows where all the bones were buried. So everybody is talking about Bannon. Bannon is not the deep throat here. He comes under tremendous criticism by Wolf. Wolf's source for most of this is Katie Walsh. Katie Walsh controlled the gates. She controlled, in what limited capacity she had, to everyone going in and out of that West Wing, which he said was like standing at a turnstile in a subway during rush hour. People just bum-rushed in. They didn't follow protocol. If they wanted to see the president, tough noogies, I know the president. She has painted the picture of total chaos that existed in the West Wing before General Kelly was brought in as chief of staff to try to bring in a little bit of order and decorum to what was a three-ring circus. And then imagine, our president has to respond to allegations that he is suffering either from dementia, Alzheimer's, or that he's just a wackadoodle.
Well, he is, 71 years old?
Yeah, but now, what is he calling himself? He tweeted out that he's not just a genius, but a stable genius.
Right.
Might I mention, for those who are students of history, and actually, as much as I don't like Bill O'Reilly, I really don't like him.
Why not?
Never liked Bill O'Reilly, okay. Pretentious a-hole that he is. But he's written a series of great history books. I got through 4 of them with his co-author, Duggard, who killed Kennedy, who killed Lincoln, who killed Reagan, who killed England. Really good stuff. And you see in the Reagan book how everyone thought that Jimmy Carter was the number one genius of all time to sit in the White House. When he ran against Gerry Ford, when he ran against Ronald Reagan, they said, oh, no, no, no. Jimmy Carter's a genius. He knows all the facts. And yet he turned out to be one of our worst presidents. So being a genius doesn't mean you're going to be a great president. Ronald Reagan was a great president. He certainly was no genius. Gerry Ford, dollar short, day late. He was no genius. But the fact is, some of our best presidents were not in a genius category. In fact, many of them, as we saw with JFK, always distracted by a little bit of trim that was walking by. Anyway, our numbers.
Wait, what did you just say?
A little bit of trim, you know, shot a leg. JFK was easily distracted.
Okay, let's move on.
With his back pains and all, he still had that urge to merge, right? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's quickly go to the phones. First up in the queue is, let's go to Danny, who I believe is calling from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Danny?
Welcome back, Curtis. And I see your nicknames are coming fast and furious. Your co-host can barely keep up with your well-named monikers. You're almost as well-known as Trump for nicknaming people. But listen, did you notice the last part about the presidents that aren't smart? It's always the Republican presidents that aren't smart. Reagan, Ford, Bush was an idiot, remember, because he had a tech set. The Democratic president, brilliant. Obama, Clinton, Carter, brilliant. Kennedy, brilliant. Only Republican in the media are known to be idiots. But again, all of this means nothing if I'm a single mother who just got a tax break, or I live in West Virginia and they're pumping coal out of the ground. This is all gossipy nonsense.
Danny, what about if you live in New York State and your taxes are about to go up in terms of the mortgage deduction that you've just lost?
I work on an army base with 300 soldiers here that all rent houses. They're all getting a tax break. They all live from all over the country. When I ask about this stuff, they don't even know what I'm talking about. Nobody cares. This is all New York City.
It depends on where you're from.
Nobody cares. These are all Republicans who submitted to interviews with the author Wolf. There's not a Democrat quoted here. These are either people who work in the legislative process. Or what do you mean nobody cares?
Because the people
this
are
gives
working,
you insight. So it's okay. Let me get this straight. As long as people were working, it's okay if there's chaos in the White House. Is that what you're saying,
well,
Danny?
Well, first of all, that's someone's opinion. It's all,
what do you mean someone's opinion? These are the Republicans quoted who work for Donald Trump. Not one of them has disavowed their quotes, Danny. Tell me one person who has said, I didn't tell that to Arthur Wolf.
May I answer the question?
Yeah, now? Go ahead.
To quote a very famous person, it's all about the economy.
Oh, my, no, no, my. All about the economy. So he would have a nut job.
And
a total psycho in the White House.
If this is all about nothing, as Danny just said, why does the president keep tweeting about it?
I ask this question to all you Trumpers and Trumpets. There are many people quoted in this book. You need to read the book. They are Republicans. They support Donald Trump. Not one has disavowed their comments. Why is that? If this is all trash, if this is all made up, if this is all tabloid, why is it that they haven't come up and said, that's a lie, I never said that? Because they did say it. And in the midst of the chaos of the White House, why wouldn't you say things about a person who acts so erratically, who is a manic depressive, who clearly changes from hour to hour, that you wouldn't comment on that?
Yeah, you forgot, apparently starts his day at 11 a.m. You forgot that part, and he's done by 6. When he promised us to be the hardest working president ever. The news story about the president arrives in the Oval Office generally at about 11 a.m., and he's done by 6 p.m. max, and then that's it. And when he promised us to be the hardest working president.
He continues to work, though, because he's tweeting constantly and he's watching cable TV. You forgot, his day begins with Fox and Friends. Without Fox and Friends, he can't function. And then it ends with Sean Hannity at night. And this is how he gets his news and information. Not through briefings, not by reading, not by having a trusted advisor break it down for him. I understand you don't want to be reading forever. You know, somebody, no.
And
Fox and Friends
Sean Hannity. Here's something I want you to think about.
That is disturbing and frightening.
Here's something I want you to think about. a 22-year-old fresh out of college could be writing one of those stories that you see coming out of the mouth of a person on television.
Yes.
And the president is basing his information.
Regurgitating it.
Regurgitating what a 22-year-old young person out of college just wrote.
If it's on Fox and Friends, it's gospel. If it comes out of Sean Hannity's mouth, it's gospel. This is not the way a country should be run. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Said you'd pick me up, you're late again.
Right. Sitting out in the back. Cold EDM, on the side right? of the road. Make sure you do that, Brian Margulich. You'll keep my mood elevated as I'm joined by Dominic Carter as we discuss the book Fire and Fury by the author Wolf that the president cannot stop commenting on. He's like a Yankee. He just cannot stop dissing this book as being fake and fraudulent.
If someone questions your intelligence, why in the world would you respond when you're the president of the United States?
It makes no sense. You just add to the controversy about people thinking you're off your rocker. And more importantly here, how many people commenting on this book have even bothered to read it? You know, the Trumpers and Trumpets. Oh, no, I'm not going to read that. That's like reading satanic text if you're a holy roller. And then how many Democrats or liberals have read it? No, they've read the excerpts because naturally it pleases them.
This may be the beginning of the end for this president.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know I don't like Trump. I've had a love-hate relationship with him through the years.
So you hate him today or you love him today?
It depends on what he's talking about and what he's doing. I measure him based on each subject, each day, what he does. But this is not a tabloid book. This gives tremendous insight. It is well written. You know, so when Bernstein and the others, they attack this guy as not, you know, living up to a journalistic performance level, that's just because they're jealous they didn't have access. This guy had 18 months. 18 months. And then once Trump is inaugurated, he's in and out of the West Wing. And Donald Trump said, I never met the guy before in my life. Yet he used to call him up all the time.
And he did the same thing, that is the president, if you recall, when the journalist that did the story about him that happens to be physically disabled.
Yes, and, the New York Times guy.
Right, and he said, I never met him before, even though he mocked him physically on the campaign trail.
I never met you. Hey, Dominic, your day is going to come, too.
No, I don't think he can do it. He wrote about me in his book.
I know.
How can he deny? He started his book with
me. Rip out those passages on all existing books. You're a person of no consequence. Let's go to David in Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Dave?
Hey, guys. I think you guys are totally, like, out of getting hysterical for nothing. I mean, Trump, he's a little wacky. He's going to always have crazy tweets. You just get over it, move on. It's never going to stop. Pompeo said yesterday, CIA director, he's a sane guy. Nikki Haley said he's sane. They said he's sane. Yeah.
No.
David. I just want to ask David one question. David, if Obama did half of what Trump is doing, would you say the same thing?
Depends. I'll be honest with you, depends. Obama was a politician 100%. Every word he said was measured. He was never on the fly. He would never talk to you without giving quotes. He was never spontaneous. Trump is who he is. He's a regular guy off the street. Is he a little bit of a schmuck? Could be. Yeah, he is. But we want that. We're sick of the tailored politician. The guy in the street knows that a lot of the stuff in the book could be true.
Hold on a second, David. So you want someone who's president.
You think he's so stupid he won by accident?
No, I'm not claiming he's stupid. But he's not a genius. I don't want
a genius
as president.
Cares? So he's not a genius.
Right.
So he said he's a genius.
But David.
We want to talk about it for years, so Trump said he's a genius.
David,
okay, he's not
does
a genius.
It not bother you that the men and women who are closest to the president, who have to deal with his eccentricities every day, you don't, I don't, they do, are quoted in this book, and none of them have disavowed their quotes.
That's not true. Stephen Miller disavowed.
No. Stephen Miller
says
did.
At the beginning of his book that not everything he says is might not
excuse
be
me.
Accurate.
Excuse me. Stephen Miller is not quoted in the book. You haven't read the book, have you?
I read excerpts of it. I got it on WhatsApp.
You read excerpts. I am advocating that whether you are pro-Trump, anti-Trump, or you're an independent and autonomous on this, you read the book. You
I have no problem believing a lot of it's true. It's not going to change anything.
So, if anything, this can be
it's not going to be the beginning of the end just because we don't, because he eats McDonald's and that. Nobody gives a damn.
So even though the President of the United States, if this is to be believed, tells the same story every 10 minutes,
Yes. That's
not reason of for concern for the entire country?
So Pompeo's a liar, right? Pompeo's a liar.
Why would Pompeo, Pompeo was made CIA director as a congressman from Kansas by this president. You think the CIA director is going to publicly condemn the president? What is wrong with you, David?
Yeah.
Okay, you don't think
right.
he wants...
You're right. Trump is a moron. He did nothing good. He does nothing good.
But the problem with you is that we have a man in the White House who is not stable at times, and that the staff is trying to do everything they can to maintain stability, realizing that any moment he may flip the script. You need to read the book, ladies and gentlemen. This is a warning call to all of us. This Katie Walsh, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff, is the deep throat. She is quoted extensively. She's got no bones to pick on this.
And even if we say the book is total garbage, let's say for argument's sake it's garbage, what about the tweet, my button is bigger than yours?
Or,
regarding nuclear weapons, what type of nonsense is that?
Or what is very common, and we've seen this said before about Donald Trump, the candidate, the citizen. When you deal with Donald Trump, it's like trying to figure out what a child wants. How many times have you heard that before? Endlessly. He's distracted, attention disorder. If you're not catering to him or stroking him, he wants nothing to do with you.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
77 WABC.
So according to Wolf in his new book, Fire and Fury, the president is a manic depressive. One minute, high as a kite. Next minute, crawling into the belly of the beast. But then again, if you're an adversary of this book, you're claiming, oh, no, no. The president is a stable genius. He knows what he's doing.
That's what the president told us.
Well, that's what he's told us, but his minions have certainly lip-synced that. I mean, just listen to Mike Pompeo, who was made CIA director as a congressman from Kansas by this president, Donald Trump.
Completely fit. I mean, I pause only because it's such a ludicrous question, right? These are from people who just have not yet accepted the fact that President Trump is the United States president, and I'm sorry for them in that.
Okay. It's his opinion. I don't doubt he's completely fit. Except at times, his mental stability does come under question. Then there's Nikki Haley, our ambassador to the United Nations. She weighed in on this.
I've never seen or heard the type of toxic language that they're talking about. Now, I'm not there 7 days a week, but I'm there once a week, and I'm there for a day with White House meetings and everything. No one questions the stability of the president.
The point you adequately made to one of the callers. One, do you think Nikki Haley is going to tell the truth? Do you think that Pompeo is going to come forward and say, yes, I've seen... The one that came forward and told the truth was Secretary of State, and he even did not confirm it. He didn't
Tillerson,
he didn't back off of it, but he didn't confirm it. Our listeners need to know, no matter who the president of the United States is, Democrat,
yes.
Republican, you're part of the administration, you go out there and criticize the president... If you're not fired that day, it's only because it's not in the interest of the president.
Of course.
Believe me, it's coming. Because to say that you're not going to be fired, that's naive.
Do you think Mike Pompeo doesn't want to be the CIA director? Do you think Nikki Haley wants to go back to South Carolina
She denies it, but she wants to be Secretary of State.
Of course. And they know they have to flatter this president.
Especially this president.
You must. If you don't, you're jeopardizing your career.
Look at what Mike Pence does almost on a daily basis. The vice president
of the United States. Oh, he kisses tuchus of the president constantly. And most importantly, if you notice, Jeff Sessions does not, and he's always on the edge of going over. Let's go to Billy on the Turnpike. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Billy?
Curtis, welcome home. Dominic, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Billy.
Gentlemen, I got to remind you that I'm not a Trump lover, but the fact is, Trump on his worst day is infinitely better than Hillary Clinton on her best day. And that's what the mission was about, okay? That's enough to carry for the next 3 years, and for me, for the next 4 years after that.
All right, but so, now let's compare it. Let's compare it to when we had Vice President Ford assume the presidency from Nixon, and then he was running against Governor of Georgia, Jimmy Carter. There were many people who said, oh, Jimmy Carter is a far better choice than Vice President Ford. Not only did he pardon Richard Nixon, but he had a series of faux pas. He wasn't the brightest bulb in the world.
Okay.
But then we were stuck 4 years with Jimmy Carter.
Right.
And we said, God, this guy is a horrible president.
Mm-hmm.
And the nation turned to somebody they had always questioned before in terms of his intellect and also his emotional stability, Ronald Reagan, and he got elected overwhelmingly. So don't all of a sudden act like you can't change and have a different opinion, that you're locked into Donald Trump no matter what. Look, Hillary Clinton would have made a lousy president. It would have been the White House was for sale with Bill Clinton chasing the interns. We all know that.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. Don't look at me like that.
Oh, Bill Clinton would have been chasing the interns.
Let me say something.
Go ahead, Billy.
You mentioned last week about, and you made a prediction again, that Mario Cuomo is going to run and beat Trump. I don't see that happening.
From the grave? That would be interesting. You mean Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo the second.
Andrew, yes. Yeah, he's going to run and beat Trump in the next election. I don't see that happening at all.
He could beat Donald. Almost any Democrat that steps forward at this point could beat Donald President Trump.
This is the bigger problem, Billy. It's not fire and fury. It's not Wolf versus Trump here as they go back and forth. The news of the day is that Mueller and his investigators have reached out to Team Trump, his legal beagles, to arrange a sit-down with the president. The president must take this sit-down extraordinarily seriously because, having been in sit-downs with U.S. attorneys before myself, nowhere near to the extent of this, but having been sweated down, every question they ask you, Billy, they already know the answer.
The exact answer.
If you perjure yourself, you're dead on arrival.
And they'll let you do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They'll lead you down the path. And you know how Trump is, Billy. He extemporaneously just keeps answering questions. Can't do that with the feds. And now that he's going to sit down with Team Mueller at some point.
But his team, his legal team is floating that they may be willing to do a written statement instead.
Fine. But then again.
But if they do a written statement, the White House can control that. His lawyers can control that.
Well, because they know they cannot control Donald Trump in a one-on-one sit down with Mueller or his assistants. That's what the president should be focused on now, because that can save his presidency. Shouldn't be about Wolf, the one-off book, Fire and Fury. There'll be other books.
But remember, when the feds sit down, if they do sit down with the president of the United States, they're probably going after a money trail. And they already have the information. As we both just agreed to, they want to see if the president's going to perjure himself and how will he respond.
Well, Steve Bannon has already told us the Achilles heel here. It has nothing to do with collusion with the Russians. The president is absolutely correct. It has to do with the Trump empire laundering money through Deutsche Bank, Russian oligarch money.
And the first question becomes, with the troubles, you remember well the casinos in Atlantic City,
sure.
His casino. The first question becomes, everything goes belly up, how did you survive?
A lot of people want to know. That's why they want to look at those tax returns. That's why the president is constantly saying, oh, no. They're being audited, because he knows that if you read the tax returns, it's going to help connect the dots.
Wait a minute. This has been an audit that started during the campaign.
He gets audited every year.
And it's still going on.
And plus, he won't replace the head of the IRS, which he said he would do. Because maybe he's made an agreement. You keep auditing me, and you can stay right where you are.
Well, remember what happened with FBI Director Sessions. I need your loyalty. How do we know that Sessions is the only one that happened with?
Let's go to Max in Port Washington. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Max?
Hey, guys. I got to, you guys, as long as I realize he's not as polished as a teleprompter reading welfare President Obama, and I'm African-American.
Wait, Max. Wait a minute. I'm going to let you have your say. Why do you say Obama's a welfare president?
Because look at the country. I live in New York, and I got to tell you, it seems especially us minorities, everybody's on food stamps. And I work for the city.
And black people are the only ones getting food stamps and welfare.
Yeah, but Obama was the black president who was supposed to.
So Max, so because Obama is the first black president, we're going to give him the welfare tag and he's the
welfare.
Go ahead with your point, Max.
Okay, the economy is going in the right direction. Trump is he's going at the illegal immigrants and the anchor babies and all that BS, and he's keeping the terrorists at bay. That's all I care about. The book I don't give a crap about. All this nonsense you guys are talking about.
So Max, let me get this straight.
It does not matter. He's not Hillary Clinton. He's not Obama.
Max, if you're getting warning signs on a regular basis that the White House is unstable.
You know what?
That there are you don't care what goes on in the White House.
I care about the things that I pointed out.
So let me ask you this, Max. If you found out that the president was taking money but was doing an extraordinary job, you wouldn't care.
I wouldn't care. No.
If you found out that the president, like Richard Nixon, was trying to use the CIA to destabilize the FBI, but the country is doing well. People were
crooked. Don't you guys see that?
Okay.
So Obama's the welfare president, but it doesn't matter what Trump does.
Doesn't matter. Trump could
steal
money.
It doesn't matter what Trump does.
Trump could.
I'm African American. I'll vote for Trump.
You said that like four times, which makes me believe you're not African American. You're as white as I am. Whenever anybody keeps saying I'm African American, yeah, right. Is this true, ladies and gentlemen, that if, in fact, we knew our president was stealing money or was using, like Richard Nixon did, the CIA to undermine the FBI, as long as the country was doing well economically, people were working, illegals were being kept out, there was peace around the world, we wouldn't care.
But the jury is still out. The Dow hit 25,000. That's great. That's great.
Oh, yeah.
They're saying it may hit 26,000. That's what Trump has predicted. His tax cut, the jury's still out, remains to be seen. They passed a tax cut that they could use.
Give
him credit. But the jury is still out. What Max was his name, I believe.
Yes.
What has Trump done that's so great? He said terrorism. We've heard the president talk a good game, but the jury is still out.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Oh, yeah. EDM, electronic dance music, which is my mood elevator.
So you ready to dance now?
Not quite yet. Not quite yet. I'm not a whirling dervish yet. But anyway, I'm back in the saddle here, 12 to 3, Monday through Fridays, and the drive home at 5 to 6. After that operation that I underwent for chronic Crohn's disease back on December 13th. Let's go to Terry in the Bronx. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Terry?
Hey, guys. First of all, the president tweeted. He ran for president in 2000. That was the first time he ran. And the only question is, I read the book, is who has a lower IQ, Dominic Carr or Curtis Lewa? You guys really sound like two little kids.
All right. Well, wait a second. You read the book?
I did read the book.
All right. From cover to cover. And what did you learn about the White House in that book?
I learned, well, in the book, it also had a crayon section. You could do coloring with
crayons.
Terry,
you didn't read the book. Stop lying. You didn't read the book.
Listen, guys, I want to give you two guys an
honesty
test.
Terry, you did not read the book. Instead of being a fake, phony, fraudulent fugazi, what people need to do is read the book and determine for themselves what is in here. And again, for all of you who were afraid, Trumpers and Trumpettes, The people being quoted are the people in the White House. They are loyalists. Kellyanne Conway is a yenta. Nonstop, she's being quoted.
Here's what people don't understand. Trump said it himself. Remember when he boasted he could go on Fifth Avenue and shoot someone? What was the exact quote? I could
shoot somebody
and get away with
right.
it. The last caller, that's what that just reflected. No matter what the reality is, no matter what the truth is, there's a certain segment and that are going to spin no matter what to try and make him look as good as possible.
And do you know who has provided more of the fuel for this book than anyone else but the president himself? Because he has a habit at night of getting on the phone and talking to his old billionaire cronies who can't wait to then transfer everything that the president has said.
Of course. And the president knows that.
And yet, he's the leaker in chief. So when you wonder where all the leaks are coming from, don't blame Bannon. Don't blame Kellyanne Conway. Blame the president, who can't stop talking like a yenta to his old friends, who run to page six, run to the newspapers, and then you read about it the next day.
Curtis Lewa.
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa from the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
What you got to say? Hollywood.
6 minutes after the hour or two. That's right, I'm back old school. This is old school cooling the gang. Papa Bell and his crew from Jersey City. As much as I love their music, I had to put up with the fact that they were followers of Screwy Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam. You probably had no idea about that, did you?
I did not, and I'm not going there.
Well, see, that proves that I'm blacker than you, Dominic Carter. No doubt about that.
So wait, so because I didn't know that Kool and the Gang were followers of Farrakhan?
The original Kool and the Gang.
Okay.
Not the one that we're most familiar with now, you know, the top 40 bubblegum hits. But that song that I just played there, that is an introduction as we're high atop Madison Square Garden. Finally, this cold snap seems to be breaking. As I'm looking at people down there on 7th Avenue running around, no longer completely bundled up. And all of this is due to the fact that NJDiet.com has provided us with these great studios that we're broadcasting to all of you from.
So wait a minute. What is this that I read about you in the Post? I think it was just the other day about you detoxifying. What are you doing here?
Well, I'm in the process now, having had the 100 staples and stitches removed from my stomach area.
So they put them in while you were asleep? While you were still unconscious.
Yeah, but on that day we got hit with the bomb cyclone, they wanted to cancel that. And I said, no, I will schlep through ice, sleet, snow, whatever it is. I got to get these staples and stitches out. And it was the best thing that I ever did. It sped up my recovery process. I'm now in the final phase, which is detoxing and withdrawing from the incredible number of painkillers that I've been on in the last 2.5 years while suffering with this chronic Crohn's disease. First, the hillbilly heroin, the oxycodone that I've spoke about regularly taking. I would never have been able to broadcast without it. And then after the operation, the tremendous amount of fentanyl and morphine that I was able to pump into my own system to suppress the pain. Although I was not permitted medical marijuana. We're going to get into that later on.
So wait a minute. Isn't fentanyl the one that they say is like 50 times more powerful than heroin?
10 times more powerful than morphine, and yes, 50 times more powerful than heroin. And yet I was able to inject it into myself. No problems. And trust me,
so
I needed it.
Okay, but what did it feel like when you injected it? Do you immediately? Because what I'm asking is that from being in the hospital a couple of times, sometimes they'll give you a medication and you're like, whoa, I want some more of this.
Well, I prefer the morphine. The morphine got right into the marrow of my bone. The fentanyl definitely knocked out the pain. But all it does is, these painkillers, is it suppresses the pain messages that go to your brain. You still have the pain. You just don't realize it, because the brain shuts it off. And now, by going through withdrawal, I have to fight off the mental desire to continue to take the painkillers, which gets people into a lot of trouble.
So that's what you feel like right now, like you want to take some of the medication? And you know, there were some days when you and I were on the air together, you were not doing good, but you were able to broadcast fine even though you were on these painkillers.
So I was on oxycodone, hillbilly heroin.
It didn't impact you at all?
Right, and that's why you don't...
Mentally.
You don't claim, you know, you don't blame Big Pharma for everything. The painkillers are there when they're needed. It's up to us to control the misuse and abuse. Can't blame that on Big Pharma. Can't blame that on doctors. You have to take some self-responsibility. That's what I'm doing right now. I've had to do this now four times. I've had to detox and withdraw from painkillers after I got shot in 92, the reverse surgery that followed that a year later, the removal of my prostate in 2012, and now, obviously, the removal of Crohn's disease from my small intestines and intestines back on December 13th. But I should have taken painkillers last night when I turned on the Golden Globes, because the sanctimonious hypocrites, while all wearing their black schmatas and black dresses and black accoutrements, were acting as if they had no idea that Harvey and the rest of the pervs were preying on their fellow colleagues. Not just women, mostly women, but men and children too. They had absolutely no idea. And so then I'm watching the beginning of it, and obviously you have the comedian Seth Meyers, who began the show.
Good evening, ladies and remaining gentlemen. It's 2018. Marijuana is finally allowed, and sexual harassment finally isn't. It's going to be a good year.
That was a good line. But then he had to start getting involved in the subject that everybody was focused on, the sexual harassment that has permeated his industry. So he referred to Oprah as a possible savior of America.
And Oprah, while I have you, in 2011, I told some jokes about our current president at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, jokes about how he was unqualified to be president, and some have said that night convinced him to run. So if that's true, I just want to say, Oprah, you will never be president. You do not have what it takes. And Hanks, where's Hanks? You will never be vice president. You are too mean and unrelatable. Now we just wait and see.
And then it was Oprah's time as she received the Lifetime Award from the Academy. And she made a presentation that NBC said was presidential.
So I want all the girls watching here and now to know that a new day is on the horizon. And when that new day finally dawns, it will be because of a lot of magnificent women, many of whom are right here in this room tonight, and some pretty phenomenal men.
Okay, Oprah.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there are a lot of women that were in that audience who, quite frankly, were unaware of what Weinstein and some of the others were doing because they were new jacks in the business. You know, they were just breaking in.
I don't buy it. I don't buy
but
it.
But Oprah knew.
I don't buy it.
Just like,
everybody knows.
But just like the grand dame of Hollywood knew, Meryl Streep.
Curtis.
Yes.
You and I don't know who the dogs are. And for example, in local media and radio and TV,
of course, we know where all the bones are buried.
We don't know who the guys are. If you're taking a woman with you to a cocktail party, well, you know, hey, don't leave her alone with this guy, because this guy try and pull her in the bathroom.
Oh yeah, he'll perv her.
Right. I mean, yeah, let's cut the nonsense about all this political correctness on this issue. We both know that there are people who will remain nameless that at their movie premieres will take women into the bathroom.
Yes.
With their wife in the audience.
Yes.
And we know who they are. So if we know, then imagine what Oprah knows or knew.
It's an incestuous industry, all of Hollywood, whether it's TV or movies, which were both acknowledged by the Golden Globes. It's incestuous. Everybody knows everything. They gossip. They're like washwomen. And it's worse with the guys. They're more washwomen than the women themselves. But here is Oprah making her presidential pitch.
For too long, women have not been heard or believed if they dared to speak their truth to the power of those men, but their time is up. Their time is up!
So I looked over at the table that she occupied with her beard, Stedman, her lifetime boyfriend, and her girlfriend, the woman who was sharing the microphone with Charlie Rose for all those years, and she didn't know anything about Charlie Rose being a perv, Gail.
Right, Gail King. But we don't know that that's her lover. I mean, that's a bit
come
much.
Come on. It's time for Oprah to come out of the closet. Stedman, he's a beard, right? It's like your friend Ed Koch had his beard all the time.
Oh, here we go.
You remember?
Here we go.
The former Miss America was his beard.
Right. What, Beth Meyerson?
Right. Even though he had his boyfriend on the side, his deputy mayor, Herb Rickman. Come on, you know all about that.
Let's let the mayor rest in peace.
I understand, but that was your friend. I'll just leave it at that.
Why are you looking at me like that?
I'll just leave it at that.
What, you're implying that something went on between me and the former mayor?
Just suggesting that you had a very friendly relationship. We did.
Right, we started out as enemies, but we ended up becoming friends.
I don't have qualms with
you
that.
You and I have a friendly relationship.
Yeah, but we don't lock lips. Now, to the hypocrites there at the Golden Globes, I'm watching and I see the Alta Kaka up on the stage. Kirk Douglas, formerly known as Issel Danjevich or something like that from Amsterdam, New York, you know, a Russian Jew, but he changed his name when he went to Hollywood, and he was a great actor. There's no doubt about it. But he's being interviewed on a night in which they're attacking sexual harassment, rape, forcible contact that women, mostly women, did not want. He raped Natalie Wood at 18. Now, he wasn't on the boat in which Robert Wagner pushed Natalie Wood off and killed her. But he raped her at 18, and they're interviewing him. And I'm saying, could you have not chosen somebody different? Are you claiming that in the industry you're oblivious to what he did during his life as a lonsman, you know, riding through a herd of a bevy of beauties in Hollywood at the time when Ronald Reagan was making his bones there?
Listen, you know I think you're a little too tough on Hollywood, but you know how this game goes. If we like you, we can ignore anything that you've done in the past. We just, poof, we act like it never existed.
And then, one of the awards went to the actress who played Tanya Harding in the movie I, Tanya. I think it was Margaret Robbie. She praised Tanya Harding, the real person. Tanya Harding, who was responsible for her goons going out and eliminating Nancy Kerrick's competition so that it would be Tanya Harding representing the United States in figure skating at the U.S. Olympic Games. And she's praising Tanya Harding on the stage. And I'm saying to myself, am I in a drug-induced psychosis? Have I not fully withdrawn from all these painkillers? Am I not watching hypocrisy with all capital letters up here? What did you make of this? And also, ladies and gentlemen, first it was Rock. He's going to run for president. Now it's Oprah. What other trendoid, freakazoid, jet-setter for Hollywood is going to decide I can do what Trump did as a Democratic candidate the next time around? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to Billy, who's calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Billy?
Curtis, good to hear you back. Welcome and best of the health to you. And hello, Dominic. How are you today?
Well, Bill, go right ahead.
You know, that room last night, and I did not watch it. I went through the channels and briefly watched it for seconds, but it was a room filled with a bunch of self-absorbed people that somehow they all got stuck in the sixth grade mentality and never really grew up because they're just in love with themselves. And, you know, I do not condone the Weinstein kind and their ilks, but, you know, these women out there act like they're so clean and bristly clean, but they're nothing but a bunch of hotsy-totsy sluts themselves. So who the hell do they think they're kidding?
Now, Bill, when you call them sluts, why are they sluts?
Because they all want to go to Hollywood with the beautiful people and mingle and go to their cocktail parties and see who they can end up in bed with.
Well, for instance, let's look at Albany and let's look at Washington, D.C. It used to be a route for pages and interns to go serve in government to learn more about government, young boys, young girls. I don't think they went to Washington or Albany in order to get boffed and sleep around with elected officials, and yet they were taken advantage of, they were abused. In fact, do you know, because of that, there are no longer pages in the United States Senate and in the House of Representatives?
Yeah.
Do we blame them, or do we blame the predators?
I just blame the whole thing is because there is a complete and total lack of morality in this country anymore. And that's why pornography is a multi-billion dollar industry.
And so you're blaming this on pornography?
I am blaming it on the fact that people are self-absorbed. They're interested in how good they can feel, how much money they can make, and morality takes a big sweep off the screen.
Well, I'll give you a better analogy at the hypocrisy. One of the awards that were given last night was named after Cecil B. DeMille, one of the big mockers out in Hollywood, along with a number of other New Yorkers who had moved west and established themselves with their casting couch. The award that Oprah Winfrey received was named after Cecil B. DeMille, who had one of the biggest casting couches of all. How much more hypocritical could you be? How come Oprah didn't suddenly say to the crowd, you know, I appreciate the award, but you know, it's named after a perv, like a lot of the originators of the movie firms in Hollywood.
I hear you. But are we now going to blame Oprah for the societal problem of sexual harassment?
No. But I'm just saying, she's accepting an award that's named after one of the biggest perverts that ever existed in Hollywood. Cecil B. DeMille.
I hear you. I hear you. And you're right about the officials being hypocrites. But at the same time, how are we going to blame a woman by throwing this in her lap for the sexual harassment problem?
Meryl Streep and Oprah Winfrey had the power where they could have condemned their own industry long ago.
But did they really? That's my question. Did they really? Would you blow possibly $1 billion to stand up and do what's right? Because I'm going to be honest with you. I wouldn't. Would you blow $1 billion in earned income to stand up and do what's right?
So it's all about the ducats.
It's always about the money.
So we heard last night was just really a pitch in terms of the revisionism that has now gripped Hollyweird.
What you heard last night was political correctness.
Let's go through it again.
And the Hollywood folks jumping on the bandwagon dominating society.
That Oprah Winfrey received was named after the number one perv, Cecil B. DeMille. They interviewed the 101-year-old Alta Kaka, Kirk Douglas, who raped Natalie Wood at the age of 18. Is this not the height of hypocrisy? 1-800-848-WABC.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
77 WABC.
Yes, yes. You see, Brian Mangalucci has learned while I was in recovery from that operation that if you want to raise my mood, you play electronic dance music like this. It's a mood elevator. It's better than Percocet, Vicodin. It's better than oxycodone, morphine,
fentanyl.
So folks
dance to this.
Oh, when I'm in shape, I'm like a whirling dervish. I can't get enough of this. I cannot get enough of this. But let's go to the phones right now. And it's Kelly who's calling from Farmingdale. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC. Kelly?
Curtis, first of all, most important, I'm glad you're doing better, and it's great to have you back. Secondly, I wanted to sort of jump on what the last caller said about the Hollywood girl being sluts. I wouldn't agree with that, and I thought your comparison to the government officials was the same thing. But like you said, I see a lot of hypocrisy. It's okay that they didn't report it, and they were afraid themselves, but stop acting like your hero now because so many other people are reporting it. It's a little come lately. And I've actually been somebody who lost housing and lost all sorts of things for sticking up for myself and other people. It wasn't about money. It was just the right thing to do. These girls, I have a lot less sympathy for them because the worst thing that would have happened to them is they didn't have that movie. And then they could have tried to fix things so other people weren't subjected to it. And it's okay that they didn't, but stop acting like you're a hero because you're not that either.
Well, that's true. That's true because they remained quiet when everyone knew. They chose not to say anything because they feared retribution and revenge from Harvey Weinstein and others in Hollyweird. But I don't know what kind of revenge Harvey Weinstein could have wreaked on a Meryl Streep. She's an iconic figure in Hollywood.
Especially then. But even in the worst-case scenario, a Gwyneth Paltrow or someone, I'm not saying they shouldn't try to fix it, but the worst-case scenario, she had friends and supports. She could have got a job like everybody else.
Well, I think...
going to be in Hollywood. They make it sound like they would have been out on the street.
Meryl Streep was the winner of the Cecil B. DeMille Award last year, the guy who was the number one perv of all pervs in Hollywood back when Hollywood first came about. And she now claims she knew nothing about Harvey Weinstein. We know she's lying.
Okay, but the problem...
Has Oprah been asked that question?
Well, we already know that Oprah... I mean, come on.
Well, I'd like her to answer it declaratively.
Okay.
Oprah, were you aware that Harvey Weinstein was perving on your fellow actresses?
Okay. Legitimate question.
Mm.
But I'm uncomfortable with this conversation because it's almost like we're putting all the onus on the women. What about the men? Okay, you and I have seen sexual harassment in the workplace. Not here, but in television jobs. Did we report it? How come pressure's not on us to report it? Why is the pressure only on the women?
Because you are never at the top of the media ladder. I am not at the top of the media ladder. But nobody can deny that Meryl Streep was and still is, and Oprah was and still is. They had the power to be able to confront this. Now, if they did not know of this, which I highly doubt, then... I forgive them. But if they knew of this and they just kept saying, well, that's Harvey being Harvey, because that was always the excuse. That's Harvey being Harvey.
And that's the way it normally went down.
Then a pox on their household. Because if they were concerned with their sisters in solidarity, the younger women rising up, coming up through the ranks, you would have thought, if nothing more, they would have been calling them and warning them, don't go near Harvey.
Okay. So... You heard the allegations about Matt Lauer before
yes.
it happened, right?
Yes.
I had heard it, right?
Sure.
Right. He was known.
Oh, he was a perv. There's no doubt.
I mean, this was a common. It wasn't even a secret.
Right.
Years before this broke,
mm-hmm.
there are other allegations out there as it relates to Matt Lauer. Do we? I understand what you're saying about being at the top, but did we have a responsibility to report it when we knew what he was doing?
But we didn't have the inside information that people at NBC at 30 Rock did.
You could go through every television station in New York, and you and I both know who the men are.
Oh, yeah.
We could point very prominent men that yes. are on your television screens every night.
Every night.
And we could tell you 1111 at every station, that's the one that's hitting on all the women.
One who's no longer with us. Jim Jensen, remember, of CBS Channel 2?
Jim Jensen was my man. He gave me my break in television.
I understand. He may have given you your break. But you knew he was a perv, and you know he was a coke freak. You know that. Thank you. You didn't expose him. I did. Anyway, up next, my war against Attorney General Jeff Sessions and his dramatic pirouette in the face of the Trump administration originally saying they were not going to go after medical marijuana, where it has been rectified through initiative and referendum in states throughout America. It's war footing here.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
.237. As you know, towards the end of last week, it was unexpected to come about at this time, but the embattled Attorney General of the United States, depending on what side of the bed Donald Trump got out of that day, whether he's mezze, poco, poco, gone, or he's going to stay, decided to launch his all-out war on those providers of first recreational use of marijuana,
Wait a second, just so that I can follow where you're going with this, because this is Sliwa talk right now. What's that term you just used? Meze, what was it?
Meze, meze, poco, poco. Okay. That means half and half. You know, okay, Italian half and half. Bodies, right?
Okay, so it's Italian.
Right.
It really is Italian?
Yeah, so which, as you know, is...
So in black talk, what would that be?
Oh, that'd be like doing the dozen cousins.
Dozen cousins?
Yeah, you don't know what the dozen cousins is?
No.
That's why I'm blacker than you, Dominic Carter.
What is a dozen cousins?
Well, I'm going to let you stew in that.
Okay, continue with the story.
I'm going to let you stew
in not that. Medical marijuana,
right.
Recreational marijuana.
Okay,
and
so
Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
His first focus is to go after those states where voters have turned out in their polling apparatus and voted through initiative and referendum to ratify the sale and distribution of recreational marijuana. The two main culprits to this attorney general is naturally Colorado and Washington State, and now California, where it is legal. And there are other states, obviously, that have ratified it, and they will be getting online soon. That's his number one focus. His second focus, though, are those states that have ratified and have medical marijuana. We happen to live in two states here, New Jersey and New York, where, go ahead, knock yourself out. Try to see if you can get medical marijuana. You have Shamu El Jefe Chris Christie, who claims it's a gateway drug. So even though he was forced to assume the legislation that had been passed by Big Daddy Warbucks John Corzine, Mr. Goldmine Sachs, right before he left office, he has made it almost impossible for people to receive it if they're in need. Likewise, Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo the First, has made it very difficult. So it's all out war. Jeff Sessions is going to use the weight of the Department of Justice and the various U.S. attorneys that he is changing now in a lot of the locations in the country to go after the legal distributors of marijuana, both recreational and medical marijuana. And here is Jeff Sessions talking about that.
Creating of knowledge that this drug is dangerous, you cannot play with it, it's not funny, it's not something to laugh about, and trying to send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
So good people do not smoke marijuana. First off, Dominic Carter, you have traveled through a lot of millennial and hipster neighborhoods that at one point were like poor and impoverished.
Yes.
And back then when they were poor and impoverished, they would have a drug spot, except it would be behind a facade, you know, a fake bodega, fake grocery store. You go
just
in.
One? Just one
oh,
spot?
There'd be many.
Yeah, there'd be one
you know,
block.
There'd be like four boxes of Kellogg's cornflakes
right,
in
right,
the window, and
right.
It was nothing but a weed spot.
Right.
Now, though, the hipsters and millennials, they have their vape stores, and they have their paraphernalia stores where you see all the pipes, the bowls, everything you need to light up and enjoy. The only thing they don't sell is the product itself. Now, do you think that's all for tobacco products, or do you think the people who live in that neighborhood are regular marijuana users?
Regular marijuana users, but that still doesn't make it right.
All right. But the point is, it exists.
Yes.
And it exists at all different levels of our society.
Yes.
The rich, the wealthy, the middle class, the poor, and the impoverished.
Yes.
And not just young, but a lot of older people. In fact, the people most using marijuana are 55 plus per capita, per person, as part of the population. So Jeff Sessions has decided to go to war against the legal marijuana industry. I am deciding to pull my saber out and go to war against Attorney General Jeff Sessions, and if need be, Donald Trump, if he is going to enforce the actions of his Attorney General. Because Trump on the campaign trail said, no, leave it up to the individual states, which it really should be, left up to the individual states. So let me give you my circumstance, because we can use that now. Months ago, I was told by State Senator, Democrat from Staten Island, Brooklyn, you know her well, Diane Savino.
Yes, she's a good person.
Right, but she's in the forefront of legalizing product, and also was in the forefront of getting medical marijuana to be available to people in need. I'm also part of that coalition. What's interesting is that she said to me, you know, based on the handbook, you qualify now to be able to use medical marijuana because you've been diagnosed with chronic Crohn's disease. At the time, as you know, I was taking hillbilly heroin a.k.a. oxycodone, on a daily basis in order to deal with the pain and the strains and to be able to function and do a program here. And I talked about it openly, and you saw me taking it and chewing on it. I could not get medical marijuana. Okay, that should be an option that everybody has available, because not only will it suppress pain, but for those who have problems as I had, as you actually witnessed, projectile vomiting, constant nausea, reflux, it could be a possible remedy for that. So now I'm in the hospital at Columbia Presbyterian. I've had a major 8-hour operation of your stomach walls, your intestines, large and small, which are one of the more painful operations that can be done on you other than bone surgery, which is the most painful. I get fentanyl given to me in a pump. I'm pumping in my own fentanyl. It caps off at a certain level so you don't OD. I then end up getting morphine injected into my IV, which I've had many times before, and I prefer that to the fentanyl. And it was great because it definitely dealt with the overwhelming pain. I could not have been able to function without it. Then, upon my discharge, they don't want to send me home with fentanyl or morphine. I understand that. So they say, why don't we try Vicodin with Tylenol? I said, you know, I've had problems with Tylenol in the past. It's given me a queasy stomach. Vicodin I've had from time to time. But hey, if it means getting out of this place, I'm all down for it. I took the Vicodin. I had an enormously violent psychotic reaction. I almost put my hand through the wall. I almost ripped my catheter out. I don't know what overcame me. Sometimes these drugs, they affect you psychologically. My girlfriend, Nancy Regula, was there every step of the way in that hospital room. And even though the doctors came running in because their eyeballs were popping out, thinking they would have to somehow wrestle me down, because only she was able to calm me down and get me back to reality. She said to the surgeon, she said, you know, he qualifies for medical marijuana. Why don't we see if he can take some of that? And maybe that will segue him through. He said, absolutely not. We don't dispense medical marijuana here in the hospital. And she said to them, you dispense fentanyl, morphine. You dispense oxycodone, Percocet, Vicodin. These are very highly addictive drugs. But yet medical marijuana is legal in New York State. He qualifies for it, but you don't have it available. And they said, no, we cannot prescribe medical marijuana. So I ask all of you, ladies and gentlemen, should I just sit back and suck it up and not say anything? Or as somebody who used to take joints out of people's mouths after smashing their heads in the wall and asking them, what the hell are you smoking this stuff out here in the public? You want to smoke it? Do it in private. Don't do it out here in public and influence kids. Now I intend on becoming a leading advocate for those who are desperately in need of medical marijuana as a possible alternative pain relief and relief for nausea, for reflux, and for vomiting. And I will be signing up in a very public manner and getting a medical marijuana card here in New York. Whether I use it or I don't use it, I am definitely going to seek it, get a prescription for it, and then throw down the gauntlet and say, Jeff Sessions, if you're ready to lock me up, come get me.
But you're mixing apples and oranges.
Why is that?
You, as you well know, you're talking about medical marijuana. The train has already left the station on that. We all agree that there are medical benefits for people with medical marijuana. Sessions is talking about the fight against recreational marijuana.
That's his number one fight. But he also wants to eliminate medical marijuana also.
Well, I don't see that one happening.
Oh.
Option two.
And you know who's like the number one advocate wanting to eliminate medical marijuana? Our own Michael Savage, who follows.
You think marijuana is benign? It is not. It is the most dangerous of all drugs. You ask every drug addict in any rehab facility in America how they started on harder drugs. They all started with marijuana. This is not a ludicrous argument. This is a factual argument. Marijuana is the most dangerous drug in the world because it is an entry-level drug.
What a jerk. You mean to tell me more dangerous than the fentanyl I was taking or the morphine or the oxycodone or the Vicodin that I had a violent psychotic reaction to? Really?
No, what he means you too. I don't know what to
He's
do.
An idiot.
What he means is that a gateway to coke and heroin and a coffin. That's what he means.
How about alcohol? You know, most people start with alcohol first. They don't start with marijuana first. They start with a beer, you know, that they just stole from the Bohack. Or they paid some adult to go in and get them a six-pack. That's what they start out with. Is that a gateway to using heroin?
Why are you turning red? And you're clearly...
I'm so furious. Anyway, let's go to the phones.
Let's do it.
Let's go to the phone. James, all the way from Virginia. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. James.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Curtis, welcome back. You sound fantastic. I've been a diagnosed glaucoma patient since I was 17. I'm 35, and I need to maintain low intraocular pressure in my eyes, or I will go blind. My options from the medical community are that I can take an eye drop that, while working, does potentially give me a heart condition, or I can wait until the insurance company has deemed me old enough to get laser surgery. But that's not really my point. My point is that, as minor as my issue is, there are veterans of wars in this country who have horrible PTSD or horrible disfigurement, and I'd like to see Jefferson Beauregard Sessions stand in front of one of them and tell them that good people don't smoke marijuana. Because all we hear, as, you know, as an audience, all we have heard is the clip that you've been playing. Nobody's got anything else from the man's lips about marijuana in general but that clip, which was recorded quite some time ago. So I'd like to hear him say something, and say something now, and say it to a veteran.
Oh, yeah, but instead, you know, he'll attend a political fundraiser like him and his buddy Mitch McConnell do while they're swimming in bourbon and gin. And they'll be so loose that their head will be actually spinning around from the alcohol that they've just ingested. Anyway, let's go to the phones and to Bobby, who's calling all the way from Seaport. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC. Bobby?
Yeah, I'm out in Keyport, New Jersey.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I've been doing that for the last 4 years since my spinal surgery. I had a very rare spinal surgery in the middle of my back. And the pills, they made me very sick, very constipated. I took one pill at night to sleep through the night. They told me I could take four a day. By the fourth morning, I woke up so constipated. When I was able to get up 4 hours from the toilet bowl, I dumped the whole jar of pills down the toilet. Whatever was in there, 97, 117, whatever was in the bottle, I dumped them down the toilet.
And so, Bobby, so the pills did not work for you.
No, they made me very sick, very constipated.
And that happens for some, so you sought out an alternative.
Yeah, another doctor told me to go to marijuana.
Right, well, there's medical marijuana, except try to find it in New Jersey, because, you know, Shamu El Jefe, Chris Christie, has hidden it.
Well, it's going to be coming out in 3-4 months. I'm planning to move out here.
Well, you're lucky because in this regard, the new governor, Murphy, is a promoter of not just medical marijuana, but also the recreational use. We'll see if he can get that through both houses.
Well, you're 100% right about the beer. Alcohol kills, but the beer is what starts everything. It's not the marijuana. It's the drinking the beer. I'm a kid from Brooklyn, just like you. Right. I grew up on 88th Street in Canarsie. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, one block away from me. Before we started smoking joints, we drank Bohack beer, the cheap beer, you know.
No, we drank Bud, but it was beer.
Yeah, well, that was
beer. You had a better brand of everything.
I had the Carly Black label. I had the Bohack beer. I hated beer, but that's what you started.
Quarts of beer, 65 cents. That's what we started with.
And for some, they never went beyond that. For others, it caused them to want to get higher and higher. You can't judge all people the same way. See, that's the problem when you're dealing with pharmaceutical products. Whether it's a leafy substance like marijuana or it's created in a laboratory. Works for some, doesn't work for all.
I just make it
optional.
I hear you. I'm not supporting recreational marijuana.
So nice. We're going to do it twice again tomorrow. Dominic Carter will be back in the house.
I'm glad you're doing better, and I look forward to tomorrow.
Well, I feel real sore.
You look great.
Got to get geared up for the drive home at 5. But I'll tell you this much, as I continue to go through this withdrawal from the opioids and the painkillers, I'll make sure that you're not a pain in my tuchus tomorrow.